If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Another point on the board, another clean sheet, and another 0-0 for Norwich City. But this one was much more interesting and entertaining than it was at Burnley last weekend. Welcome to the latest edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, reviewing a 0-0 draw with Brighton that had Carrow Road producing a very good atmosphere at points. Dave Freezer here alongside Paddy Davitt and Connor Southwell, coming to you also in association with Future Radio 107.8 FM. And yeah, Pad, I described it in my video verdict as the Burnley 0-0 was more of a Championship game. But to me, I thought this felt much more like a Premier League encounter.
Agreed, yeah. It's almost you have to... If you want to treat this game in isolation, then they played a team who won 4-7 in the league this season. You know, I think there was... Because I was sat in the front of the press box at Carr Road next to the Brighton media team. I think they had a chance possibly to go top today if other fixtures of results had gone for them. So that's the level of opponent. And really, Norwich, yes, Brighton had some chances we'll get into in more depth. But Norwich had notably one big chance. But there's plenty of other good opportunities to have got the win. And in the context of that, treated in isolation, you'd say, yeah, very good, Norwich, maintain that. And you won't go too far wrong in terms of trying to achieve what you're trying to achieve. But I think underlying the undercurrent, and there was a little bit of dissatisfaction at the final whistle by one or two pockets of fans in the home areas. And for me, that's probably more a reflection of, it's not in isolation. It's after seven previous games where they've only took 1 point from seven. That was the last one against Burnley prior to the international break. And they're almost playing catch-up. And in that context, probably goalless draws isn't going to be anywhere near good enough. And of course, the goalless element of it is continuing. And that's two league goals in eight Premier League games. And one of those was a penalty. And both of those were scored by Teemu Pukki. That's a productivity level which unfortunately will lead on back to the Championship. So for me, that was it. It was almost, on one level, commendable and lots of positive facets, and it did feel like it had built on again from Burnley in terms of what they added in the attacking dimension, albeit with the same outcome, i.e. no goals, but set against where they are now. And we said about it after the final whistle, even now you look at the league table and there's one or two worrying gaps beginning to emerge between Norwich and the majority of the clubs above them. And you know, that those gaps get any bigger, then it's very hard to try and reel teams back in. So yeah, it's mixed emotions, I think, today for me watching that game, because there's not huge amounts you could fault Norwich for, but ultimately it's another game that slips by without a win and without any goals, and that isn't good enough.
No, and we will, of course, be talking about Josh Sargent, and we'll all be trying to actually say that name because it seems to trip people up, the Josh Sargent. You have to sort of separate the two, don't you, when you're trying to pronounce it correctly. But unfortunately, a little bit of a nightmare for him. But Connor, overall, this game, I mean, the atmosphere the second half, and you know, there was that moment in injury time, wasn't there, where Daniel Farke was actually whipping up the crowd a bit, and it felt like... they were really behind the team, and a lot of what they saw today, of course, everyone wanted the win, they wanted the goal, but it felt like most people in that stadium were on board with what they were trying to do today.
Yeah, and I would say that was the same, certainly after the game at Burnley as well, for those who travelled. I think you probably saw a split of people who understood what the Burnley game was about, were there, understood the situation, how difficult it was for Norwich City in that environment to come away with a clean sheet and a point, and it did feel the same again today. And I guess what Pad has said there about the ending and how you had some pockets of fans that maybe weren't particularly happy with the outcome is right. And I'm the same, really. I feel a bit conflicted, because you look at that, if you zoom out and just look at that, or zoom in and look at that game in isolation, you see a point against a very good Brighton side, not one that I think will be challenging for Europe by any stretch, but probably one that will finish in the top half. But equally, as Pad said, you have to think, if they can't win a game in that situation, when are they going to win a game in the Premier League? Because they're going to get a few better opportunities than that one today. And to me, it almost felt you could have plonked it in the middle of that December 2 years ago when they had these games that were almost lined up for them to get points out of and get wins out of, and they didn't do it. And it that is the concerning element. But look at it in isolation, and it's another clean sheet. I felt they looked pretty solid throughout, beyond Trossard's shot in the first half, which was outrageous, small pace chance at the end. I know, obviously, Lallana's volley. Beyond that, Brighton didn't really trouble Tim Krul too much. And you'd probably say Norwich had the better chances. So definitely a step in the right direction. Daniel Farke spoke in his pretty much press conference about small steps, and it was another small step. But at some point, they're going to have to start beginning to run or trying to run, because if not, and obviously it's a trip to Stamford Bridge and Chelsea next weekend. Leeds are currently 4 points above them in 17th. I don't particularly like looking at the league table at this stage, but there's a situation that we could be talking about a seven, but we won't be. But there could be a chance that we're talking about a 7-point gap next weekend. And even at this stage of the season, that's not a good position to be in. So, yeah, I'm quite conflicted by it. And I would imagine probably fans will go home and feel quite conflicted as well, because it was a much improved performance. But equally, they didn't get the result they probably wanted, and that some will feel they probably deserved.
Yes, it's not an easy situation, and it's not easy to keep asking people to look for positives. People, obviously, this is football's a simple game. At the end of the day, you can get into all the complicated elements of it if you really want to. But at the end of the day, people just want wins and they want goals, and some people don't want to dig much deeper than that, do they? And if they don't get that, then they're not happy. But there's a huge amount of context around all of it, and clearly that's the sort of thing that we often are providing for people. I think we should just do it straight away, Pad, really, get straight into the Josh Sargent issue, because he's the man that most people are talking about walking away from there. Now, he's arrived at the club in, you know, a difficult situation, really. Him and Rashica were both relegated with Werder Bremen, weren't they? But he's turned up with a bit of a reputation for certainly his all-round game being very good, but not particularly great record in front of goal. But this was one of those moments where you just want the ground to open up and swallow you, don't you? And you felt for the lad, you really did, just before half-time. It's handed to him on a plate. Sanchez takes out Byrne, I think it is, and he's got an open goal there. And the instant he struck the ball, you knew he'd made a mess of it, didn't you? And it was just excruciating.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was agonisingly in slow motion. And watched him. I purposely made a point of, and as soon as the Brighton players cleared it for a corner, he just put his head in his hands, and it's kind of, what have I done? And we're recording here about a couple of hours after the game, and I'm not sure he'll get too much sleep tonight, because he'll be replaying that over and over. What a moment in the context of the game, in context of Norwich's season, but also that man's career. You know, two goals, wasn't it, against Brighton? Bournemouth in the League Cup.
Yeah.
But yet to open his Premier League account, and for certainly an American player as well, the Premier League and the allure of that and the exposure, you know, what a trajectory that could have set him on if he'd got off the mark. And you know, you're a fully fledged Premier League goal scorer, still a relatively young man, but the fillip he would have got from that, because as Daniel said, when inevitably he was asked multiple times post-match, a lot of it, maybe symptomatic to what we've just discussed about Norwich, a lot of what he did was good, was very good, in fact. You know, his general play, the way he battled three quite muscular Brighton central defenders, and positive signs of a real link up with Timu, not just, you know, two lads who run about and sweat and toil, but actually signs, I felt, of possible, some genuine productivity. There was one or two prior to that big chance towards the end of the first half where there was one, he made a run into the channel, Sargent, he rolled a defender and shot on target, and it was just deflected, I think, for a corner. And, you know, ultimately, I just hope that doesn't define him at Norwich, and it might be a bit premature to say that on the basis of, you know, however many handful of Premier League appearances he's had, but you just hope that he's the sort of character that he can brush that off and process it and deal with it and move on, because, you know, they're the sort of moments on which potentially, you know, you can go one or two ways in a Norwich shirt, and it would be a shame. But unfortunately, what'll happen is now, and you alluded to it, Dave, you know, he came with a reputation as not a prolific goal scorer, if you look at his Bundesliga record. And the longer he goes without scoring now in a Norwich shirt in the league, those questions and accusations will continue to grow. And if he doesn't start to score soon, it would be very hard for Daniel, despite all the positive elements of his general play, to keep him in the side, because there'll be a clamour to get him out and get Rashica down the middle, or Jolis, or maybe Adam Eder. All lads who are really having very minimal amounts of first-team involvement at the minute. He isn't. He's starting games now regularly with Teemu. And ultimately, what it boils down to is what we all say with strikers. Doesn't really matter what they actually do outside the box. They will be judged ultimately on their goals. And whereas Teemu Pukki's record over the entirety of his Norwich career is phenomenal, almost his goals-to-games ratio. Yet to see Josh Sargent in terms of productivity, and he'll never get a better chance. It was an horrendous miss. It really was. As Connor said during the game, it's almost like he's focused so much on just trying to get the ball on target. He's not hit it with the requisite pace, and whether that's a lack of concentration, whether it betrays a guy who is almost snatched at that opportunity as his eyes lit up. But as somebody I saw on social media put after the game, you know, an £8 million striker should be able to roll the ball into an empty net from 20 yards. So not good, not a good look for that man. And big question marks remain about, can he score the goals Norwich need to get them out of the situation they're in?
Yeah, it was, he had so much time that he could have pretty much run it towards goal and then finished it. He didn't need to take it anywhere near as quickly as he did he? Let alone make such poor contact. And the concern with him will be, for such a high profile miss, that is the Premier League for you, isn't it? Social media is going to be full of sort of ridicule for him, which he's going to have to do his best to ignore. And they're really going to have to get an arm around him and protect him and make sure that he feels appreciated, because it's got the potential to have a bit of a psychological knock for him, isn't it? Particularly, Connor, at the start of the second half, he then gets another big chance, doesn't he, when Pukki plays him through and he just dawdles too long on the ball.
Yeah, and it's worth noting as well that his place in his international team as well is under sort of conversation. He was left out of the last USA team, for example. I know they wanted to go perhaps a more American core, but even so, that doesn't necessarily help his confidence heading into this one. It wasn't a particularly great performance at Burnley, as we discussed, although it was a lot better today. Ultimately, people are going to, as we are, going to end up talking about the miss, and again, it was not just that one. There was one in the second half that you referenced where just got the touch all wrong, and seems to kind of personify Norwich at the moment. A lot of energy and endeavour, but doesn't really look like scoring a goal, and that's an issue. If we're going to talk so much about taking the goal scoring burden off Teemu Pukki in the Premier League, they need to do that. They still aren't able to do that. Then we're going to be looking at players like Josh Sargent, Adam Eder, we could go on, but players like that to chip in and help out when they can. And as Pad said, he's not going to get a better opportunity than that in the Premier League to open his account. And why we can all replay it and ask questions. Why hasn't he done this? Why hasn't he done that? But it just, to me, looked like a player really devoid of a lot of confidence in front of goal at the moment, and he's probably a bit like Norwich generally, to be fair. If he can get a goal and maybe a win in his or under his belt, rather, then we could see him really go. But it's now the fear of what that miss could do in the opposite direction and the hit it could have on his confidence and his performances. So yeah, hopefully they can nurture him in the week to come. Obviously it's Chelsea next weekend again, so it's a pretty thankless task that he's going to have at Stamford Bridge. If he is selected, and you can just hope that there's a suitable response, because overall I felt as Pad hit the nail on the head. I thought first half everything else he did was excellent, but it's not enough to justify your place in the team as a striker, as he will well know. I'm sure he's not naive. So yeah, very disappointing, and in the context of the game, a massive moment, but again, more so for where Norwich City are at the moment, because a win would change the complexion, I think, of everything that we're talking about, and the mood and the feeling, the belief around the club. I mean, we spoke about the good atmosphere. It just feels like these fans are crying out for a win and a little bit of belief to get their teeth stuck into. Well, if Josh Sargent would have scored that and Norwich City would have won this game 1-0, then I think we'd all be looking ahead to the next few weeks with a lot more positivity than maybe we are at the moment, where we're probably in a bit of a state of conflict.
Yeah, when I did my ratings and my video verdict after the game, I said that if he'd have scored, he probably would have been an 8 out of 10. But I knocked him down to a 6 out of 10, despite the fact that his general play deserved better than that, because those two moments were just... You're a striker, that's what you get measured on. But I did think that the crowd, again, were very supportive of him when he was substituted. What was that? 76 minute, Rashica came on for him. And I thought that was a pretty good reception he got as he went off. There wasn't any sort of uneasiness to it. So, yeah, it's a real test for him, for a young man, to keep his mental strength and bounce back from high-profile disappointment. But I'm sure that they will get their arm around him this week and really try to make sure that he feels supported and stuff, because that's what he's going to need, clearly. Let's look at the positives then. For me, Pad, man of the match, went to Pierre Lismalou, who I thought had his best game in a Norwich shirt. Thought he was pretty tenacious, looked box to box, looked more like the sort of player we were expecting. Did he take your man of the match?
No, I'd probably favour Norman until he went off. I just thought he's almost the heartbeat of this side now, and it's testament to that man in so few games that, you know, maybe contrasted there, we've just discussed Sargent. Came in a little bit after him, but still one of the summer intake, and it's conceivably, looking at his performance levels, it's taken him no time to A, gel and bed into this Norwich team and become an intrinsic part of it, but also the Premier League. You know, he, in a side which are struggling to certainly put wins on the board, he looks at home. Every time he's been on the pitch in a Norwich shirt, he doesn't look out of place in the Premier League. And I think you'd have to feel already that if Norwich are not able to turn it around and find themselves back in the Championship, he won't be with them, because bear in mind, it's a loan with a view to. And I think it's safe to say if Norwich go down, he won't be staying. But I could conceivably see plenty of other Premier League clubs queuing up to take that man if he can maintain this level of performance. He's just, well, it's his, you know, it's everything. His quality passing, you know, his range of passing as well, the drive, the energy, the combativeness as well. You just hope. You'd hope his body would hold up and he could last 90 minutes, because, again, he's come off, but thankfully with what just sounded like cramps in both calves, Daniel said, towards the end of the game, having not trained for 10 days over the international period, had to pull out of Norway's World Cup qualifiers with an abdominal issue, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. And that's the only sort of negative, really, about him in a Norwich shirt so far, is that he's not, for various reasons, not able to last the pace, because I think when he's on the pitch... There's no doubt Norwich look a far better cohesive unit. But I wouldn't disagree. I thought Lismalou looked very good. There was his reading of the game on the edge of his own box a couple of times where he broke up Brighton counters was excellent. McLean, you kind of know what you're going to get from him, you know, most weeks. Thankfully, he's kind of those individual mistakes that proved so costly earlier in the season look to be a little behind him at the minute anyway. So there is an energy and an endeavour from him. But I just think, in the context of a team who are struggling to score goals, that three still, for me, isn't offering enough in terms of the creative side of the game. And it's not just down to those three. There's obviously the whole wider debate about the base formation and maybe more of a focus back towards defensive setup. But I think, for me, Norman is a shoo-in. If he's fit, he plays. And I'd still think, you know, Gilmore has to be in the debate. Rupp maybe less so, but it just... feels as a three, it isn't quite functioning as it needs to be able to give Norwich what they need going forward. I think defensively, two clean sheets would indicate that they're doing a lot of things right now as a unit without the ball. But put it this way, if there was three Matthias Normans in that midfield, then yeah, you'd be very happy, wouldn't you? Because you're getting the drive and the go forward momentum as well. But sadly, there's only one, so they just need to keep him fit, keep him healthy, because he already looks to be a very integral part of Norwich and what they're trying to do this season.
At the moment, he's nailed on player of the season, isn't he? He's just looking an excellent bit of recruitment. And we'll come back round to Gilmore, because, of course, he can't play against Chelsea next week. We'll discuss his situation. But top man for you, Connor?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Norman as well, I think. And I felt for portions of that game... forget Norwich, I thought he looked like the best player on the pitch, to be honest. And again, we're looking at four games now that he's probably been Norwich's best player in all of them, and I think it's not just what he's doing, it's what his quality is doing to Norwich as a whole, because I think he's improving players around him. You mentioned Lismalou, who I'd agree I thought was probably had his best game for Norwich so far. Kenny McLean, a lot of energy just makes that a little bit more solid. And I think we're probably at a stage now where they can I think they'll probably adopt a similar approach for Chelsea, and rightly so. And then thereafter, you'd like to see them just play with it a little bit and see if they can add a little bit at the top end of the pitch and maybe evolve this 3-5-2 and maybe to a 3-4-3, because I think from what we've seen of Mateus Norman, there's enough there to suggest that he can offer the protection that Norwich City need and also the range of passing as well. But Pad's right, what he said earlier on, the Sargent and Pukki combination again looks to have there was potential there, but it's just about sort of joining the dots now and getting that balance right, and that's the hardest thing to do for any team at this level. You can ask Sean Dyche, Graham Potter's spoken about it before. You try and open up one end and you perhaps leave your back door open, but you try and shut the back door and then you can get a bit toothless up front. So it's a very difficult job that Daniel Farker has got now to balance that, but Mateus Norman is going to be key, because I think he's proven that he's good enough for that 3 to become a 2. And then Norwich can maybe begin to add some attacking elements. And I think if you were probably going to look at that 2 at the moment, on today's performances, you'd say Norman and Lees Malou. And then you'd probably look to try and get a Kieran Dowell, a Todd Cantwell in there for creativity purposes if you're to persist with this 3, and maybe look to push one on. Or if you are to play a 3-4-3, then maybe you could look to Rashica and Jolis or Dowell or Cantwell. You can look to get a couple of more of these players in who... maybe turn the 3 or 4 good opportunities Norwich City had into 2 or 3 goals, and because that's what's needed at the moment. And ultimately, we can sit here and talk about clean sheets and how positive it is, and it is given the context of the opening 6 games of the season, where they lost all of them and were far too open, didn't look strong enough, didn't look defensively sound enough. I think Norman's the key to Norwich City really progressing, and it looks like now the foundations have been built, and it's going to be about what they can do at the top end of the pitch. But yeah, I think he's going to be the key to it, and it's just keeping him fit now, because he's played what, 190 minutes in 4 matches, and if they can do that, then they've got a very capable Premier League midfielder.
Yeah, let's just hope those sore calves don't protect him from training, prevent him from training for a few days this week, because they're certainly going to need him at Chelsea. And I do feel like him and Lees Malou have probably got the potential to be that midfield 2 if you're going to go to a 3-4-3, and then you know, maybe have Rashica and Cantwell or whoever in support of Pukki. We shall see how that develops. But if we look at the back 3, I mean, a good day for Tim Krul generally, it's worth saying. You mentioned it earlier, didn't you, Connor? The Trossard volley, which he just gets fingertips on to make sure it goes onto the bar. And also a good save from Lallana in the first half, another clean sheet for him. So Tim will be happy, particularly as he's lost his place in the Holland team. He's going to really need to impress in the Premier League to have any chance of that. But the back 3, Pad, I think Gibson's looking more like himself. It certainly is suiting Hanley in the middle, isn't it? He's getting for a lot of work at the minute. And I think Kapak is growing game by game. So I just, you know, that Farker stuck with an unchanged 11 and 18 today. I can't see him going away from that back 3 anytime soon at all. Certainly not at Chelsea, obviously.
No, that looks set fair now. And that was the drive set by him post-Watford, and how poor a result that was, that they had to get better defensively. And the route he's taken so far, because Everton really didn't create a huge amount. Yes, they lost the game, but that was individual errors. So you could even hinge Everton onto Burnley and now Brighton. That 3, I'd agree. I thought Hanley was good again today. Pick of the 3 for me. Kabak went wandering a little bit and a little bit of ball watching. But there was one incident in the second half, actually, which underlined what the 3 gives you. And Kabak caught, I think, Trossard run off the back of him. And there was Hanley mopping up behind him, snuffing out the danger. So Gibson looks far better because I think he's less exposed, that sort of lack of pace that we saw most graphically in the home game against Leicester.
I think he's got his rhythm back a bit as well now, hasn't
he? Yeah, and the injury that he talked about, you know, it took him a while clearly to get over that and get back up speed. Just having that confidence in your body ultimately, yeah. Isn't it? And he'll have had the self-doubts about, is he able to play at this level given how poor the experience went for him at Burnley previously. So, yeah, I'm liking those 3. Aubameyang Daly's getting a lot of game time in the Republic now, so you know he has to be still in the equation for me. If any of those 3 drop their levels, still a very young, inexperienced defender, but if you start regularly for your country in World Cup qualifiers, surely you have to be, you know, at least in the conversation. And then I'm really liking actually the 2 now, the wing backs, if you want to call them that. I thought Yiannoulis was very good again today. and not just going forward. There was one or two occasions early in the second half he got himself out quickly. I think it was Moda, and it was an excellent block just on the edge of his own box. Completely clear to anyone watching that game now that he looks a lot better in a three or a five, if you want to say that, as Graham Potter suggested it was a five that Norwich set up with.
Max actually referred to it as a five as well.
I mean, it was certainly a five when Brighton were on top and they got pinned across the width of their own box. But, you know, for Yiannoulis particularly, playing in a three flat slash five as opposed to a back four, for me it's transformational because he's got that added insurance behind him of Gibson on his side, that he can go forward, he can, and of course, if you're talking about him or Brandon Williams, just that natural width to have a left-sided player makes such a difference rather than Brandon Williams, right-footed player, playing on the left-hand side, wants to cut in all the time. So if they persist with that, then for me, I don't see him changing that five, including Carroll, six, anytime soon. And why would they? You know, if you're getting back-to-back clean sheets in the Premier League, that's a notable feat. So that should give them the foundations to, as we've already discussed in this pod, to then start to embellish that and then try and tweak and tinker in order to get more creativity and obviously more potency in terms of the top end of the pitch. But much better situation now than, you know, four or five games in where it was just like, well, they can't score goals and they can't keep them out. At least, albeit still a small sample, but at least it feels like they've come up with the right answers in terms of keeping the ball out of their own net. And if you're going into games and you've got that confidence that you can go into games at this level and keep clean sheets, it doesn't have to give you a chance of getting something at the other end of the pitch. And that's what he asked for after Watford. And so far on that particular facet, you'd have to say they've delivered.
Oh yeah, this game was just incomparable to the Watford performance, wasn't it? So much better. I know people aren't excited by a 0-0, and there are going to be some people frustrated that they maybe didn't go for it more in attacking terms, but I think that's underestimating how good Brighton are. I think they are significantly better than Burnley and probably better than Watford as well. You know, Watford got smashed 5-0 by Liverpool today, although Liverpool are motoring, particularly Mo Salah is probably the best player in the world at the moment, isn't he? But to carry on that thought process then, because second half particularly, I thought Max was much better and I'd agree Yiannoulis was good. But if you're to move that to, all right, so maybe we should be referring to it as a 5-3-2 now. but so if we're then referring to it as a 3-4-3, then the two attackers who are going to be in support of Pukki, if it's Jolis and Rashica, for instance, they're not really going to be wingers, are they? Because you've got Yiannoulis and Aarons providing the width. So that makes you then think, could Gilmore go in there? We've seen McLean play further forward. Certainly Cantwell and Dowell, it suits them. But can it suit Rashica and Jolis?
I think so. I mean, Norwich did it to great success last season, albeit in the Championship, but they had Cantwell and Buendia essentially playing as wingers, if you want to label it like that, but they weren't wingers essentially. They were two number 10s, weren't they, playing in wide positions and they played close to Pukki, and that allowed Norwich still to retain their fullbacks width and height, and so you're essentially taking that bit of what made their attack so successful last season and adding it to the foundation that they've got this season. And if they can do that and make it work and get the balance right and ensure that they still have a foothold in midfield and are still battling, and Norman and Nismalu certainly seem to offer them that, then I think you'd say there, and I think most people would agree at this stage, that that is a formula for something that could be potentially quite exciting, but also add the efficiency that Daniel Farke has spoken about in both boxes. Because I think there's an argument now with Grant Hanley. We saw a couple of decent blocks from Kabak, good moments again from Gibson, who I'd agree, I think those three are really getting better and will continue to get better the more they play together. If you can replicate that at the top end of the pitch now, then I think Norwich are on course to do something that could make them a lot better and could see them take a stride towards being a better Premier League team. And I reference it to you guys after the game. It just feels like they're always going to improve and they probably will even get better from here. It's just a case of if that happens quick enough, and we've already spoken about points gaps and kind of what the state of the league is at this stage where they start getting points on the board. Because people had similar debates about Fulham last year when they started very poorly and then were kind of in a position where they began to improve, then after Christmas looked very good, but ultimately still got relegated. So it's an interesting one, because Daniel Farke will know that clean sheets and nil-nil draws aren't going to be enough to keep them in the Premier League. They have to add an attacking edge. And it's just about how they do that without losing what they've got. But I suppose at this stage, he's got a formula now with this formation that he knows, okay, well, if he does try at some stage to open it up a little bit and it doesn't work, he's got something that he can go back to that he knows at least makes them competitive for large portions of games. But Pad's right, when they're playing the way they are and it's so low margin, in theory, that should mean that their attacking threat or lack of kind of works in their favour, because you essentially need one chance like the Sergeant one that we've spoken about today. That would have been enough to win the game probably. So it's really difficult at this level, because you try and do one thing and it can expose you at the other. But I think you've got to give credit to Daniel Farke. I mean, we spoke about that Watford game and we sat here and said they've got to tighten up, they've got to get better defensively. Well, they've done that, so now he's got to prove he can do it at the other end as well.
Yeah. Could you just have a look how Chelsea are getting on? Because they're playing as we're recording. They won 1-0 against Brentford. Right, okay. So things keep motoring along. Top of the league. I mean, we'll come back to Chelsea in a minute, because I just wanted to ask what you thought of the penalty call, Pad, in the first half. Maupay goes down. I think it's Krull, which actually makes the contact rather than Hanley, isn't it? From I haven't actually watched it back yet, but at the time, it seemed more to me like he was already going down when the contact happened with Krull. Isn't that your reading?
Yeah, well, I think when I saw the replays, he took another couple of steps as well. Now, if you're going down, you don't go down in instalments. So the referee clearly is in real time has given a goal kick. So that tells you what he thought of it. Graham Potter, Brighton manager, asked about that after the game. And I think it was words along the lines of very difficult for VAR to overrule that decision, which I took to be quite a diplomatic, would have been a very soft concession if Norwich had coughed up a penalty in that scenario. Right. So yeah, there might have been a little bit of but not enough, clearly. It certainly in the eyes of the VAR officials to overrule. So, if you draw a parallel between that and obviously Kabak's high foot on Alan at Goodison Park, he was never going to get turned over that. So, and Krull's reaction, that sort of told you what he thought of Maupay's dying swan act. So, I think that the right decision was reached.
Welcome to the new normal.
Hello, and welcome to this series of Unfinished with me, Charles Thompson.
Welcome to Weird Norfolk.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Pinkin.com Norwich City podcast.
From true crime to football, politics to folklore, for more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Right, let's talk Billy Gilmore then, because we are going to be looking ahead to Chelsea. We are going to be building up to a very difficult game. Champions League winners, they've been fantastic under Tuchel, haven't they? They've been playing three at the back a lot. They've got, you know, players on the Ballon d'Or shortlist, Jorginho, Kante. Oh, they've got unbelievable depth of riches, haven't they? Strangely enough, that lad who was on loan at Ipswich is coming to it, though, isn't he? Trevo Shalabar. One of whom, of course, is at Norwich City and impressing for Scotland against Israel and the Faroe Islands, it should be said. Pad, we saw Billy Gilmore's face when Lucas Rupp got the call, didn't we, to come on for Norman when he was struggling with cramp. And he didn't look best pleased. I mean, Lucas Rupp isn't really gaining too many fans at the moment, is he? Because he gave the ball away again when he came on. He didn't do very well when he came on at Burnley either, did he? So, but let's not get into the Lucas Rupp debate. Where do you see Billy Gilmore's situation? Because Daniel Farke didn't take too kindly to suggestions that he should be in the Norwich team at the pre-match press conference, because he said, well, he has had a lot of game time.
Well, in the round, he has. I mean, he was playing pretty much every game in that very, very difficult start for Norwich. But if you actually drill down and not just look at the minutes against his name in a Norwich shirt, you know, those games he was being asked to do jobs that's not Billy Gilmore's game. You know, defensive midfielder trying to rat and win the ball back against Man City, Liverpool, Leicester. Good luck, you know. Even a Kante dropped into that scenario in a Norwich shirt is going to struggle, and that is his specialist position. So I think he was sold a very raw deal there, but that was the scenario because they hadn't done the deal, obviously, for Matthias Norman at that stage. Now they have. We've talked about it already on this pod. You know, Norman is the man now, and it's fitting players around him. And you know, if Farker is blanching, I wasn't in the press conference on Friday. If he did bristle, you know, about Gilmore's lack of activity, but reality is, I think that could be one of the intriguing elements of Farker's next evolution in terms of what he's doing this season with this Norwich setup. If he can harness what Gilmore does give you, and clearly does in a Scotland shirt, whatever the level of opposition, you know, he's winning rave reviews every time he pulls on a Scotland shirt in these last two international breaks from club business. So, and the fact he's coming through at Chelsea, as we've just reeled off there, you know, if you're anything to do with Chelsea's first team, you're a player and you know what you're doing.
You're a baller, Pad.
You're a baller, to use Daniel's terminology. So I think that's the slight contradiction here, is that the hype that was around this guy when he swept into Norwich in the summer after his Euros display, notably against England, and now he's reduced to, you know, prowling a touchline and maybe having the hump when Lucas Rupp is getting a better of him and getting the call. It doesn't quite stack up at the minute, and in the context of Norwich struggling to win games of football, that's going to continue to be the case, because you've got this precious material in Farker's grasp, and seemingly he's not getting the best out of it yet. But I think, at the risk of repeating what we're already saying here, you know, there's an evolutionary process underway now, and the focus clearly for Farker and his coaching team in recent weeks and games has been defensively and without the ball. And if that's where the focus is, and ultimately Gilmore, as he proved to his detriment in those first games, without the ball, not going to offer you too much. So if they can now get to a position of comfort as a coaching unit that they feel they have the without the ball side of it more often than not, at least competitive in the Premier League, now is Gilmore part of the solution in terms of the creativity? And I think he has to be in the debate, because, you know, as I say, a player who's got a Champions League winning medal, however much actual, you know, involvement he had in that, he's a Champions League winner. There's not too many of them in Norwich's squad. So there has to be, in the right environment, against the right opponent, in the right midfield mix, surely there has to be a place for Billy Gilmore. Daniel now has to find him a place. And if he doesn't, then you can conceivably see a scenario where Tuchel's on the phone approaching the January window and they're getting him back, because they didn't send him to Norwich to sit on the bench when he's been sat on the bench a lot of the time at Chelsea. So we are now getting to a bit of a tipping point, I think, in terms of Billy Gilmore on Norwich, because, you know, it isn't a huge amount of games left between now and January. And if his situation doesn't change, maybe you see a mutual situation where they decide, as happened with Patrick Roberts previously on loan from Man City, that it's in everybody's best interest for him to go back to Chelsea. And that would be a huge shame, because you just feel how Farker likes to set up, the type of midfielder he likes. Billy Gilmore should be perfect for him. We've all seen the type of midfield players that Daniel likes to incorporate in his Norwich teams down the years. And really, Billy Gilmore should be tailor-made. But at the minute, for reasons we've already stated, that isn't the case. But I do hope that there is a place for him, because I just think, in the right setting, developing what you boys were saying earlier about, you've got Jolis, you've got Rashica, you've got Cantwell, you've got Dowell, you've got Gilmore. Surely there is a formula going forward that can accommodate the gifts of all of those players to the extent where Norwich could be far more potent than they are at the minute. And ultimately, there's one man who has to unpick that equation, and that's Daniel Farker. So I think if we take anything from what he said on Friday, his passionate defence, he still very much believes in Billy Gilmore as a football player, and that he can be of use to him. But at the minute, it's hard to see. Certainly he's not going to obviously come in. He'll be ineligible against his parent club next week. So that's another week, another game that ticks by. And it is really very hard to see him maybe coming in anytime soon thereafter. So I don't quite see what the path is to Billy Gilmore coming back into Norwich's first team, but something needs to change.
No, and it makes you concerned that we're heading towards a Harry Kane, Patrick Bamford situation then, doesn't it? Where, you know, Kane obviously went back to Spurs, and then I think it was Leicester he had a success with after that, wasn't it? And Bamford ended up in the Championship the next season with Middlesbrough after his time with Norwich. And I think Gilmore would clearly be tearing up in the Championship. Is he the player that Norwich need in the middle of a relegation battle? That's what we are finding out at the moment. But for me, there was no debate in terms of ahead of the Burnley game. McLean kept his place ahead of Gilmore. I didn't see that was even of real consideration. And all right, McLean didn't do anything too spectacular today, but his energy and the work that he gets through, he is a... We all have heard from Daniel Farke previously, haven't we, about how much he values him as a team player and sort of being the glue in a team almost. So let me put you on the spot, Connor. If Gilmore was available against Chelsea, which he isn't, against his parent club, would you bringing him in for McLean based off the back of today? Because I don't think I would.
No, I'd agree. I wouldn't. And Pad's right. It's so difficult at the moment, particularly when Mateus Norman is going down with cramp and Lucas Rupp's getting the call and Billy Gilmore isn't. That's a very difficult situation to see how he repairs that and bridges that gap and gets to a stage that he's in Norwich's midfield. And I made this point in the week. I just wonder whether Norwich are at a stage at the moment themselves where they can't really carry a player like Billy Gilmore in their side at the moment because of the focus on the defensive aspects and what they've needed to do. And he's clearly not in that picture and he hasn't contributed to these foundations that we've seen being built. And it feels like if you're Daniel Farke at the moment, as much as we're kind of talking about adding attacking elements, we're probably not really talking about changing the personnel in midfield too much. And it's probably about one of those three dropping out rather than adding another one. And it becomes very difficult then. You're almost forcing Billy Gilmore into a two based on what he's doing for Scotland and on reputation rather than what he's done for Norwich City so far. If we're kind of talking about a 3-4-3. So yeah, I find it very difficult to foresee how he's going to get himself back in the picture unless there's some injuries or a situation that pops up from a certain game that maybe he's suited to. But and as Paddy said, it's a tremendous shame because you can imagine him in the Norwich City side last season. It'd have been tremendous. It'd have been tremendous to watch. And as you rightly say, he's far too good for the Championship. So then you're probably looking at, well, where else in the Premier League can he play? And maybe there's an argument to say, well, he's a player that can only really play at top clubs because he needs to be in a side that dominates the ball and where he can put his stamp on it. And I mean, we saw it. Probably his best outing in a Norwich shirt was the half against Liverpool, wasn't it? In the cup game where he was very positive. Yeah. And there was that spell that Norwich City had where they got on the front foot, and that was largely because of his work in possession. Well, he's not played a minute since then. So it's very difficult at this moment in time to see how you slot Billy Gilmore back in, given Lais Malou's performance today, given what Mateus Norman has done since he's come in, given all that Daniel Farke has said about Kenny McLean. I just don't see it at this moment in time. And I don't see how, without shoehorning him in somewhere that wouldn't be comfortable and wouldn't be beneficial to the team, if Norwich stick with this formula and if they go in the direction that we think they may be going into, I don't see a place for Billy Gilmore.
No, it's and I don't think we expected to be saying that, did we? But maybe it's just too early in his career for this kind of a move for him. We shall see, because there's no doubt that the lad has got a huge amount of talent, and technically he probably will end up being a top player, as Kane and Bamford both proved to be eventually as well. So very interesting, and he's going to have to stick out his chest, really, and force his way in front of McLean or Lais Malou as things stand, unless maybe Norman has an injury or there's an injury opening for him. But the next time he gets the opportunity, he's really got to take it and start putting some of those doubts to the back of people's minds. We shall see. And I'm sure Tuchel and Farke will be having a glass of wine or some coffee and cake, perhaps, after the game at Stamford Bridge. And it will be a topic of conversation. Maybe even they'll include Gilmore in that chat, but we shall see. Let's finish the pod on the strikers, really. Obviously, we have talked about Sargent in terms of the negative aspects of today, but I thought him and Pukki, their link play was far, far better than it was at Burnley. But it is four games without a goal now, if you include the Liverpool Cup match, when Jolis, of course, missed that penalty just before half-time. How different things could maybe have been if he hadn't have shown that naivety. He's not played a great deal since then, has he, really? Pukki goes away, breaks the Finland record, finally. He'd gone seven games without a goal for his country, but three in two games during the break, which is a great achievement for him, and he should add a fair few more to that, you would have thought, before he stops playing for Finland. He's still only 31, so he should be able to really solidify that record. And overall today, Pad, I thought he was pretty good, although there were less high profile, but there were two misses, weren't there? He puts one just wide, and okay, maybe not a miss, but when Lise Malou sent him clean through in the first half, he tried to get Sargent in rather than shoot, didn't he? But overall, probably his best performance of this season, maybe Watford in the mix, because he scored a good goal that day.
That was an excellent goal, and that goal was for me certainly harder than some of the chances he got. You know, I think of the Aaron slip pass, when he's basically, again, similar scenario, not exactly the same position on the pitch, but the keeper to beat, and he's tried to clip it and put it in the side net. And there was another chance as well later on. I think it might be Rashica put him through, and seemed to Dally, just that fraction you can't do in the Premier League, and that invited Dan Byrne, I think it was, to come through and make that sliding tackle. And the way his teammates sort of went to congratulate him, that was, they felt, maybe a match-saving tackle. And not to the same marked extent as the Sargent miss, but again, lots of positive things in his performance, both individually and as a collective unit. But you know, we're sat here again, as we were after Burnley, as we were after Everton, and they've played together and they haven't scored a goal. So, you know, ultimately, it doesn't just fall on the shoulders of the strikers in this team to get them scoring, but they are in the side principally to score goals. And, you know, that won't insulate, you know, going away and doing what he did for Finland and coming back very confident. You could kind of see that in his general play, there was a freedom, I thought, to a lot of what he was doing in the first half. And, yeah, if you take away the most important element of what you would judge a striker from, then those two played very well this afternoon. But if Sargent isn't going to be scoring goals, then that places an even greater burden on Teemu Pukki. So he needs to be taking one or two of those chances he had today, really. And that is the difference. Ultimately, you know, Daniel talked about it, efficiency in both boxes. At this level, you're not going to get the quantity of chances they get in the Football League every other week if you're Teemu Pukki, and that's whether you've got an Emi Buendia in your team or not. It's not going to happen. You're playing against better defenders, better teams, better coaches, better defensive setups. So when you do get the level of chance they got today, they have to take one or two of those goals. And to be fair, Daniel was not hiding from that fact after the game. You know, at this level, the chances they created today, they should be scoring those goals. And if they don't, then we all know where it ends, and that's back in the Championship. So, yep, for now, there's no doubt it'll be those two again at Chelsea, because I think they showed enough. And Chelsea, you probably can't really judge them, because if it goes as we all think it probably will go, then they won't see too much of the ball, I don't think, and certainly won't have as many chances as they had today. But thereafter, you know, the game's coming up, they need to start firing. And if they don't, then, you know, the clamour for Jolis, the clamour for Rashica, and maybe even Ida to an extent, will grow and grow and grow. You know, we had this with Teemu two seasons ago. You know, what he'd done, heroic stuff that he'd done in the Championship, didn't insulate him from, you know, criticism and ultimately Daniel pulling him out of the firing line and putting Josip Dermić in. Now, obviously, that move didn't work in the final analysis, but by no measure of means is that man bulletproof. You know, if he's not scoring goals at Premier League level, he won't be in the side. But it is worth reiterating, he's the only man who has scored for Norwich in the Premier League. So I don't think the moment is upon us anytime soon where he's coming out of the side. I think if it's going to be one of those two come out of the side, it'll be Sargent. But for now, Daniel seems to be very happy with what they're giving him generally. But much like Norwich, they just need to add the final elements, really. And that could be the difference between really having a competitive go at staying up or going rather meekly.
Yeah, they need to find the next gear collectively, don't they? And as we sit here today, Connor, if anyone's going to score a goal for Norwich, it's probably Matthias Norman, but it's Teemu Pukki, isn't it, if you're talking in terms of the strikers. And a penny for Adam Eder's thoughts, perhaps, because he's having a bit of a frustrating time of it at the moment, isn't he, club and country-wise? And he only comes on in the 90th minute. Rashica's the man that comes on for Sargent in the 76th minute. He's not really getting many opportunities to show what he can do, but yeah, I guess he's just got to be patient. But equally, he hasn't scored, has he?
No, and it feels like we're kind of in the same position with Adam Eder that we were in 2 years ago, where it kind of feels like he's in kind of a halfway house being probably too good to send out on loan, because obviously Norwich need him just for numbers really up front, but not good enough to displace Timo Pukki. And I think you'd have liked to have seen a little bit of movement at least in the 2 years that have followed, but certainly the pecking order at the moment. I mean, he was third choice 2 years ago for large parts of that season behind Pukki and Dermich. 2 years on, he's behind Pukki and Sargent this time around. So for him, I would imagine he's probably feeling a little bit stuck at the moment because, and yeah, you're right, he's absolutely not getting helped by giving 2 minutes at the end of a Premier League game. I mean, what can any player do in 2 minutes, really? It's a very difficult situation to be thrown into. It just feels like he needs a goal, he needs something, he needs a cameo, but then if he's not getting those opportunities, similarly to Gilmore, really, it's very hard to see what he can do to force his way into the side. He's still very raw. I think we saw against Liverpool in the Cup the elements of his game that still need to be worked on. And it just feels like everything's passing him by a little bit at the moment, which is a tremendous shame because, again, we all know the talent that he has and the sheer amount of goals he scored at youth team level. So I don't really know what the solution is, because in January, do they go and send him out on loan? But then they probably need another body in. And if that was to be a permanent option, which given all their loan spots are filled at the moment, it would probably have to be, then you're looking really at him getting pushed even further down the pecking order. So it's tough. And I don't really see what the answer is with Adam either. But I would imagine if we reach next summer and he hasn't played an awful amount of football this season, he might be knocking on the door and saying, "Look, what's actually the plan for me here? Because I'm not getting enough game time to develop, and you're not sending me out on loan. So what am I supposed to do? Because I'm getting a little bit stuck in the background, and football careers are short, and he's sort of spending a key part of it sitting on the bench and not getting very many minutes for Norwich City. So it's difficult to really see what he can do in this situation.
Yep, lots of interesting angles. I don't know, I feel after that chat, like normal after a game when we come and record a pod quite fresh from the game, you know, it gets stuff off your chest a little bit and stuff. I feel a little bit more positive even than I did after the game. We've pointed that there's enough positives and things are moving in the right direction, that almost the mission this week now is about surviving Chelsea, getting out of there, you know, battling, really digging in, doing everything, you know. Look, I haven't seen the highlights and stuff today, but Burnley only lost 2-0 at Man City today. And as we know, if those big boys turn up like Man City did, they can give you a good spanking. And Burnley have had it against Man City and Liverpool and stuff before. And we all know how tough Burnley are. If they can just survive Stamford Bridge, obviously, if they get anything out of it, it will be a huge bonus and a huge addition to things at the moment. But if they can just get through that with some of this positivity and the constructive stuff moving forward, heading into the Leeds and Brentford game, then hopefully they'll be in a decent place to get one win from those two games, because they really do need to win one of those two games, because you go into the November international break, and yes, there are some more winnable games afterwards, Southampton and Wolves at home particularly, if they haven't got at least one win once they've got those two games out of the way, and we're in December as well, then of course we all know which way things are heading. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting week. Thank you very much for listening. Loads at Pinkin.com, of course, as usual. Interview with Max Aarons from after the game. As I mentioned, the Josh Sargent player watch, Paddy's pointers, there'll be the six things, Pad's verdict, all the usual stuff to fully analyse this 0-0 draw. Thank you for listening. Do let us know what you thought of the game as well. If you ever want to get in contact with us, then we are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Pinken. We're also on TikTok now, Adam tells me. So I'm not on TikTok, so I haven't checked that out properly. But if you are...
I said he was going to do some dancing reels.
No. I said if Norwich win the Premier League, then you'll get me dancing.
No, I thought it was winning the Premier League.
Absolutely not. No, not a chance. No. No one will want to see that, trust me.
Let's get the campaign going on here. Anybody want to see Connor on TikTok, give us a message. Twitter.
If you're a TikTok user, then check it out. I'm sure it's good. But we'll trust Adam to build up that account. But yes, by all means, do get in contact with us if you've ever got any questions or comments about the pod. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch up with you soon.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.